Just Not Good Enough with Chaz House on FUBAR Radio.
Welcome to Just Not Good Enough.
Thank you for having
me. Which is a mental health podcast. Hello, Laurie. Laurie Haynes I'm with today. Right, so I've been doing some research on you. And okay. I've written here, you come from a challenging background.
Yep.
Yeah. You left home feeling neglected without a father figure.
Yeah.
Mother who was an issue and neglected you as well, I guess. You then decided that you're going to focus on your mental health and well-being, which is great. You have your partner with Fern McCann, Towie
yep.
Star.
Yeah.
And you have a baby with
we
her?
Do. Yeah, we have a little girl. Yeah, Finty. She's Finty? 10 and a half months.
Oh, fab.
Yeah.
Fab. I've got a granddaughter who's 15 months and they're just...
Nice.
They're just scrummy. But anyway. And you've got your own TV show as well. And you've got this newish business venture. I'm going to say Shura. Is that right?
Yeah, either way, Shura. Whichever way around it helps you remember it. They both mean the same thing. So we're not very over particular with how people pronounce it because it is quite a common question. And where it is a kind of word that was almost plucked out of the blue, but not quite. It was a famous word in a song, a very popular song by Elton John.
Oh, that's my era.
Yeah, but it was when he did a collaboration with De Looper.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'm glad you know which one it is because people normally go, I don't know, and I have to end up singing the chorus. And then, it either brings tears or giggles. But it was a part of the chorus in that song, and it's a
Why
song
choose
that.
It, then?
So it was a song that I really liked and used to play a lot. And then people would always play it and tag me in it on Instagram. Then when I met Fern for the first time, it come on and she was really singing it. I was like, well, this is kind of my song. She was like, no, I love it. I play it all the time.
Oh, wow.
And it was favourited on her Spotify. So we both loved the song. And then when we were deciding the name for Shura, we put lots of names in the hat. And then that song just come on in that particular moment whilst we were actually deciding it. And the chorus is Shura. That's a part of the chorus. Was like, Shura. And I was like, let's have a little look at what it actually means. And there's nothing that you can find online except in the Urban Dictionary in Arabic slang, there's a terminology for beautiful, powerful queen. And I was like, well, that's what you are, Fern. So this is Shura. Lovely. That's the brand name. And we stuck with it from there. And it's just
Fantastic.
Been a part of us now.
So just go back. I'd like to hear your own story in your own words, actually. So just tell me your own story.
Yeah, so I'll start by, touching base on some of the points that you mentioned. So it did really start from a traumatic, sort of turbulent childhood. I wouldn't say it was all bad, but unfortunately, as the years have gone on, I've struggled to remember many of the good times. As human nature goes, many people sort of remember the negative and bad times.
Yeah,
that's something which is hard to shift. And I wouldn't say completely neglected individually as a person, but more emotionally neglected by my mother.
Okay.
So a little bit of a difference in comparison there. And
I'm going to interrupt you.
No, now. No, of course. Yeah, go
okay,
for it. Yeah.
Interrupt me. So,
yes.
So it wasn't a physical neglect at all. So
no.
You were well cared for, well looked after.
Well cared for,
all
yeah.
That sort of stuff.
Always fed, yeah, always looked after. Were we a little bit deprived at times throughout my childhood? Some would say, why would you or should you feel entitled? So I totally get both sides, of success and poverty. I understand both elements.
Yes,
so when I say deprived, it was more the things that I can't comprehend and digest that a parent, when you become a parent, you sign a virtual agreement to look after that child with every part of you for life.
Yep.
And as a parent, that's something you must do with dignity. And I, as an adult now, really understand And as I said, I can't comprehend why would you spend money on alcohol every night, fags, drugs and certain kinds of things when I would still have to go to school with holes in my clothes, in my shoes and be embarrassed in front of the other kids and being the sort of alpha male that I've always been and always been a bit of a ladies guy. It was embarrassing that the other kids always had the cool clothes, the nice stuff. And as again, I never felt entitled, but I also felt very embarrassed. And I could never understand why my parents worked. I say parents, step parents as well, but which we'll touch base on. And the embarrassment and shame led to me then not wanting to be in the school facility. So I would try and make myself, I was basically an absolute toe rag in school because I wanted to get kicked out and suspended so I wouldn't have to go to school looking like someone
that had,
there we go, right? So I'd often climb the fence and climb the gates. I wouldn't go to school. And was it a retaliation to try and look for maybe some sort of emotion from my parents, maybe to try and give me something back? Was I seeking something?
Escapism, maybe?
A bit of escapism, exactly, because I was embarrassed of my clothes and, you know, certain things that everybody was having holidays and doing certain things. And all the good kids towards the end of school years, if you had a great report, you were allowed to wear non-uniform. Now, when that announcement came out, that was like D-Day for me because I didn't even have correct good school uniform without scuffs and stains and crap. So how the hell was I going to wear any fancy clothes to school? All my friends had all the Nike tracksuits, everything. I didn't have that. So I was embarrassed, so I would be naughty extra just to get put on report so I wouldn't be allowed to wear non-uniform. And
how old were you at this stage?
Well, it started from junior school the whole way through, really.
That's quite a mature strategy, tactic, whatever you want to call it, for doing that, thinking, you know, how am I going to do it, and actually almost planning it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll go right into the strategic thinking behind the way I do things in life. And I've always had a burning desire because I know I'm always going to be more. And that's how I managed to, I say escape, but leave Portsmouth where I grew up and certain things around that. So it was, I look back at it with not so much resentment. I don't carry resentment because that would stop me being in the present moment and it would sort of suppress my future. So I don't hold resentment, but I also don't have a relationship with any of my parents or step-parents. And that's...
Not at all.
Well, one of them died through alcoholism. The others, one went to jail. The other guys were never really, I'd class as a step-parent because they used to sort of beat my family, right? I don't have any element of blame, but I would have liked to enjoyed my education, my academic time in school, because it would have helped me further in life. So I've had to go back to university in my 30s. So I'm currently studying psychology. I've listened to endless hours of podcasts, YouTube. I've done so many courses and spent excess of 100,000.
Why psychology?
I'm very fascinated with neuroscience, neurology, the way the brain works, how we think, how we perceive things, how people live their everyday life and why we do the things we do as humans and how we are also the same but very much completely different,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it fascinates me. And so I've spent many years studying that. And quantum thinking was a big thing that I started with. I always want to understand how people's thought process was when they engaged in a certain conversation. And there's an analogy when I try and explain quantum thinking to people. And it's, you could put a burger in the middle of the room, right? There could be six of us sat here now. There's a burger in the middle. I've just been gym. I'm a meat eater. I'm starving. The burger's looking at me, right? You're a vegan. You couldn't think of anything worse than that burger being right there, yeah? Someone sat to the right of me just had a big roast dinner. They don't want nothing else. The burger hasn't changed. The room hasn't changed. We're still the same people in that moment because change takes time. So we're all the same people. But the burger has changed the conception of what we're looking at and how we're feeling in that present moment.
So I find that really fascinating because, I mean, I've done a lot of research into mental health because I live with it myself.
Yep.
Yeah. And people look at some, mental health is invisible, right?
Yep.
But physical illnesses aren't. Obviously, you've got a broken leg, it's obvious you can see it, and people will be compassionate and so on. But when somebody's going through shit, right, and the reaction then is about, well, they're a miserable old git, aren't they?
Mm.
Yeah. And actually, what somebody's doing by making that judgment isn't actually thinking about how that other person is thinking.
Yeah.
So in the same way, the burger, you know, I'm thinking, well, why the hell doesn't he want it? I want that. I want that burger. Why isn't he picking it up? Come on. But I have no concept of where your brain is at, as indeed I haven't got any concept of where that. So the whole thing around compassion and thinking how other people view things is unbelievably important.
It is so important, but again, I don't have any expectations to believe that everybody should understand the mechanisms of quantum thinking, because how can they, right? We're all individuals in our own rights. And
isn't that the key, though?
It is, and education is also the key, because You mentioned people would sort of say, "Oh, he's a miserable old git," right? Let's say, for
that's
instance,
for me.
That for you, for that analogy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And but the reality is, the people that may have had that perception of you, of probably in the statistics, in a high probability that they're undereducated in what is actually going on with you and society. And we can't also put blame that they should know, because shoulda, woulda, coulda is a very powerful phrase, right? And some people don't need to feel they want to take it on themselves to spend time to understand how other people are feeling, because a lot of people are born narcissistic and self-righteous.
Yes,
and, you know, it's a skill set that you can learn to overcome that. But when will you? You will never know, because everybody has their own epiphany moment at different times.
You see, I think you said talk about education. I think that's absolutely right, and awareness building. But I'm going to the Marylebone Theatre this afternoon, right?
Nice.
And I was there a little while ago, and one of the ushers had clearly got a mental disability, let's say. And he was struggling a little bit to communicate. And he was a lovely, lovely young man. And this chap came up to him, and he was obviously educated, because right? He was very well dressed. He spoke with the right accent, etc., etc. But he was nasty to this guy, and I don't see any excuse for that whatsoever.
No. There's normally a few factors to that. Now, so he probably isn't happy with himself. He is expressing some type of frustration because he believes he needs to be somewhere sooner, maybe, than he is, or he somewhat is. arrogant in the fact that he sits somewhere in the hierarchical structure to the guy at the door because of maybe a pay grade, or
we shouldn't be like that.
It should be the totally opposite to that. Now, he maybe is living a resentful, hedonistic, nihilistic lifestyle, right? Maybe he's not happy with who he is, so he blames the world subconsciously, maybe not in those exact words, and means he goes through life every day, you know, treating people without respect, which means he can't respect himself, because, you know, subconsciously you can't treat someone how you don't believe you should be treated yourself. And that's the way the world works. So if you look at other people in that manner and you treat them like that, you can't theoretically actually treat yourself with respect. So people that don't treat themselves with respect usually are people that live without purpose. So you won't get a purpose-driven individual that doesn't have respect or the same sort of quality. So purpose-driven people, like that gentleman probably isn't, have goals, right? And they set goals. And people that have goals are usually more fulfilled within life. Now, I was going to use the word happiness, but I always try to explain the word happiness in it's not a destination, it's a stimulation that you feel.
It's a state of being.
In the present moment, right? You can feel unhappy and happy in the space of a few minutes, right?
Yeah.
And it could be as much as listening to your favourite song, crossing the road, someone bibs you. The direction can change in seconds, yeah?
Yeah.
So when I try and explain to people, they say, how can I be happy? I get a lot of DMs being an advocate of mental health and well-being, and I publicise a lot of things that that I want to advocate. And people say, how can I be happy? You seem happy. And I'm like, God, no, I'm not happy every day. Like, I have moments of happiness, but I'm also human. I have moments of self-doubt. I have moments of imposter syndrome.
Do you hide behind your personality?
Do I hide? I believe that everybody hides behind the person that they believe they should be perceived to be.
Yeah.
Because if you were the person you were, like me this morning, I was dancing around. I was up at 4:45 this morning.
With your baby?
No, actually, she didn't wake up until 5:45. I know, sad, I know I get up extra early.
It's
but
preparation for today, clearly, show.
I had calls with my developers who are based in India, so I like to make sure I get my time in with those guys first, because they're ahead and I respect the time difference.
Yeah.
And then I was in the cold plunge pool, and then I was sat outside in the rain because I love the feeling of the rain. And then, you know, I had my endorphin and dopamine rush from the cold plunge.
Yes,
so
you would,
when
yeah.
my family come downstairs, which was Fern and the baby at that point, Sunday, my stepdaughter, she has a little bit of a, I'll say a lay-in, but she gets up a little bit later compared to the baby, right? And I'm dancing around, dripping wet in my pants like a monkey that's just been released from the zoo, because that's me expressing my sort of my happiness and joy, you know, first thing in the morning, where somebody else maybe would wake up with a complete different mindset and maybe don't express themselves in that way. And is that them hiding behind the mask? You know, who's to say?
I'm thinking socially, right? Because I do
yep.
this.
Okay.
I could be feeling like absolute shit. Right?
Yeah.
And I live with clinical depression, right?
Okay.
Which comes and goes. It can last I know, 3 or 4 minutes, it can last 3 or 4 months. Yeah. And you're in this really dark, depressing, horrible place that you can't get out of. It's like a gravity well of blackness.
Yeah, been there, yeah.
And when I'm in a pub, for example, or I'm with people, I will be out there with my personality and I'll be hiding behind it so that people don't see what I am like, and therefore, because I feel ashamed of what I am like.
Mm.
And but then when I finish doing that, it costs me a hell of a lot because I've done something that's not me.
Yeah.
I've acted, I've used more energy than perhaps I wanted to. And so you actually go then down even further into depression.
You deplete your social battery, as I call it.
Yeah.
And I'm someone who's very open and transparent. A lot of my friends laugh. And I was at a wedding recently in Barbados and I was like, guys, social battery's bleeping red. I'm off to bed. I don't drink alcohol. I'm 5 months or so sober, dry, and which we'll go into in a moment. And they just laugh. And I'm messaging the group chat. I'm like, I appreciate it's your wedding. Big day for you guys, but I'm in bed. Would you mind turning the music down? Turn the music down? Fern said, you can't say that. I went, well, it's in the WhatsApp group. I've just done it. And that's me. And they all laugh and they know the way I am. And I'll go for dinner for a couple of hours and go, guys, I'm done. They'll go, what? It's only like 9 o'clock. I'm like, yeah, but I want to get up at 5 because I've got ambitions and goals. I've spoke to you for 2 hours. I've got what I need from you.
How do they react to that?
They all know what I'm like and they laugh and we make a joke about it, because for me, like, over 2 hours, we don't have nothing more to talk about, and now we're just losing time. And I'm a big person that's passionate about time. Money doesn't matter. Time matters, right? Because we only get a limited time on this earth. That's one thing you're not guaranteed is the expiration date, right? So why would you waste extra time doing something that doesn't need to be done? And this is something I'm trying to really advocate to Fern and really trying to help her do, because she'll go out on social date, lunch, and dinner, and chat, and phone calls.
But that's her job, isn't it, to do that?
To a degree. Some of it's just conversations and phone calls and certain things. And my friends know, right? So an example, and some people will say, you can't do that. And Fern said, you can't. He's a busy guy. I'm a busy guy. We kept missing each other for about 2 weeks. So I just sent him my Calendly link. And he then sent me a voice note and I said, you ever send me a Calendly link again? And I was like, well, did you look at it? He went, well, I looked at it, of course, because I want to speak to you. He said, but, you know, send me a Calendly link. We're supposed to be best friends. Your groom's at my wedding. I was like, I want to speak to you. And time is a resource that we don't all have, you know.
Yeah, okay.
And he laughed.
Good, because I was about to say, was that a really angry reaction?
No,
he laughed.
Yeah, taking the absolute mic. He's right. Like, you ever do that to me again?
Right.
And it was really funny, and it was a sort of a joke as well, but I was playing up to it. But it's more, I value my time. And the reason being is I've spent so many years in dark places. I've spent so many years building businesses that are, some of them I've sold, some of them have failed. And they're life lessons. I'm not going to change that. I mean, I've got a magnitude of resilience because of my mental health journey and because of my entrepreneurial journey, right? So I'm not going to change any of that. Could have things been done differently? 100%, but I don't look back, right? And I want people that listen to this to understand they don't need to look back, because looking back will suppress and hold you back from completing and achieving some of your goals. And I really want to go into the goals topic with you as well, because people that set goals normally are more ambitious, which means you've got more probability of living a more fulfilled life. Because someone who's goalless is normally aimlessly just walking around, right? And how can you ever change and accept evolution when you don't actually have anywhere to be aiming towards? Now, some people say, well, I've set the biggest goals. I want a jet. I want this, because I used to be someone that was very materialistic. Rolexes, Rolls Royces, that's all I cared about, because I needed external validation because I never got it as a child.
Uh-huh.
But I've now, over the many years, don't have any of those things, and I couldn't think of anything worse than having those things, because I don't need that. I get validation from inside now. And when someone messages me that, usually a Gen Z or somebody that's like, how can I build a big business and stuff? And I'm like, whoa, you're talking about a big business, but you haven't even started building yourself. I'm reading your paragraph there and you can't even articulate what you're trying to do. Start by listening to some podcasts or reading some books to start understanding what you want to try and do. Those can be instruction manuals to help guide you, right?
Do they come back later and say...
Always come back. Other people send me messages like, oh my God, I've just got a promotion, or thank you so much, I've just saved my marriage. And all the way to the other end of the spectrum, where I've had people message me and say, you've saved my life. I was gonna take my life. I was self-harming. And there's been one occasion that... you know, there was a woman in particular, and I was helping her on and off for such a long time, and I'm not a clinical therapist, and I can only go to so far to a degree. Yeah. I messaged just to check in with her, and the family messaged me and said, "Laurie, we've read all the messages. Just want to say thank you so much. You kept her on this planet longer than she would have been." Which obviously past tense, we know exactly what's happened. Yeah, and I sent them a voice note, like sending my condolences, and I was very upset because she had clinical depression, right? And I don't need to go into the science of what that is versus different types of things. And there wasn't enough help and support for her, and I'm not going to point my finger at the NHS because I understand that's on the verge of collapse as well, and I know that it's not those guys to blame. It's the lack of education that needs to start from a prevention side of things from a younger age. We work so much on putting budgets and funding towards adults in the senior years, but we then often neglect the children and the next generation that are coming through, and that's why we're stuck in this repetitive cycle.
Yeah, I read the other day that something like 75% of all mental health issues start before the age of 18.
They start before the age of 9.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so why are we not helping more for the children in schools? And you know, the academic system, it's so dated. Like, and I always speak openly about things. I don't want my child to learn about the Romans. I know about the Romans because I did it in school on and off. That's never, ever made me one successful deal. Right?
You know, I'm thinking about this because I like history now. I failed bloody history A-level, would you believe? Yeah. I'm more interested in history than anything else. And I think, well, why? I do know about the Romans, but why? Well, what's the point?
But you like history, as you mentioned, because it's a passion for you.
Yes, and actually it fulfills me.
It fulfills
learning.
You, and that's something that you do for your downtime. You enjoy learning about that, right?
Yeah.
So I might enjoy playing golf. We both get dopamine and endorphin stimulations from different places, and that's okay because life is about stimulants. That's what we do as humans. Why do you eat chocolate? To feel some type of stimulation in your mouth receptors that go down into your body, and then you get some type of feeling, right? It doesn't last long because it's a cheap dopamine hit. Chocolate, sugar, Netflix, alcohol, drugs, they're all quick stimulants to try and make you feel better in the moment, but the biggest thing is the crash after.
Like I say, it's the cold turkey,
and that's what you need to learn. People that say, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm like, okay, what are you doing the weekend? Oh, I'm out with the lads. Great, you're drinking. Yeah, right, you're gonna be in the same position on Sunday morning. Well, that's a bit negative. No, you're not changing who you are, so how can you expect evolution to change where you're going to be? And too many people focus on the here and now, or they get so worried about the future, they don't allow themselves to live in the present moment. Yeah. So you're merely just breathing air and living and walking through life, but you're not truly living with who you are.
To come back to I think it was your podcast, you said about the person who said, how do I build a big business?
Yeah.
They're actually living in the future, aren't they?
They
Something
are living
that
in the future,
they probably can't achieve.
No. And look, I get people obviously question everything that I say because I've got a fairly nice sized social media platform, and I always will have healthy debates, yeah? And I put something out about creating goals that are not attainable. Well, that's just silly. You should dream big. How can somebody dream big when they can't even comprehend living with their own life that they're in right now?
Yeah.
You can't even speak and see about tomorrow because you're too busy moaning about today. So what are you dreaming about? And Well, it's good to dream, but you don't even dream because you're not even sleeping properly, because you're going to bed at ridiculous times and you're not even waking up at the same time. You have no routine.
Isn't it a desire for having some other's lifestyle?
That's a delusion because it's how can you be so fixated on having the life of someone that you merely know nothing about? All you know is what you perceive, what they perceive to show you on social media. Let's use that one as an example because social media is very big. So you don't know what they do when they go home. You don't know what they think about. You don't know what their relationship is like with their wife or their husband. And the statistics are there of how many people live and cohabit together and they're not even in a happy relationship, right? Happy inverted commas. So how can you be so delusional to want something that you know nothing about? That is a pure statement to say that you are not living in the present moment. You're wanting something that is not attainable, but it's also not positive. So set goals so big that you probably won't reach them, but what will happen is every step towards reaching that goal, you'll trigger the reactive system in your mind, which is an initiative system that makes you feel good because you're working towards a goal.
Yeah,
so you have to break the big goals into small steps.
How do you get people, though? I think this is quite difficult. How do you get people to evaluate their life as of now and not think it's shit, right? And say, to be grateful for what they've got, to looking towards goals that are achievable, not in 50 years' time or whatever it is, but in, let's say, the next 2 or 3 years, I want to be here. Yeah. Because the stuff that comes at them through social media is as you just said, it's all about the wonderful stuff there, but not the crap stuff. So how do you get people to convert to thinking about where they are now and be realistic about themselves?
Well, it's like when this goes out, I might get some people pumped for 60 seconds, but ultimately the action needs to come from that individual. I'm not going to be knocking your door at 5 a.m., dragging you out of bed, dipping you in my cold plunge, dragging you in the gym, feeding you healthy food, putting you to bed at the right time and waking you up again at the same time. I'm not going to be doing that. So you need to be holding yourself accountable for your own actions. And if you cannot do that, then how are you ever going to expect change? So you get a mixture of people that will sit there and moan about their life but won't make that step to make that change, which is probably the biggest proportion of society nowadays, right? And if anybody says to me, look, what can I do? I'm stuck. I've got anxiety, which I've had anxiety so bad. It felt like that every time I walked, the ground moved. And I even told my mother at the time, throughout our rocky relationship in my early teens, that if this didn't stop, I will take my life because I cannot bear this anxiety anymore. Went to the doctors many times and I was offered SSRIs. And now looking back at that...
Oh, sorry, SSRIs?
SSRIs, different types of medication, beta blockers,
okay.
Things to sort of help trigger oxytocin, serotonin, to keep the mind, to keep the neurochemicals more balanced, right? And which I understand if it's a clinical aspect when it comes to certain levels of depression, which you have sort of damaged different neurons, right?
And you're just thinking a different way.
Neuroplasticity... Yeah. You know, get suppressed and stuff. So neuroplasticity is something that we can all expand and work on as well, by the way. So when people say, oh, you're stuck in your ways, that's total garbage. When people say, oh, but my mum and dad was like that, that attitude is why you are like
that.
But
that's an excuse, isn't it? I can't be asked to do anything.
It's the easy excuse to give yourself self-validation to excuse
It's not my
truth.
Fault. Yeah, it's not my fault.
My mum, it's my
dad always used to say that.
Exactly, you know? Right? And I found myself in that situation too, and I had to have a long, hard look in the mirror and say, but I don't want to be like my mum or my stepdad or any of those guys. So I can't use that phrase anymore, that terminology. So back to your original question, you know, how can people make that change and make that difference? Some people have an epiphany moment like I've had. Some people need to start with the small intricate steps first. Now, it's easy to look at someone like me and go, oh, well, you're in shape, you're fit, you're healthy, you do this, you do that. Yeah. Wow, what an inspiration. But you haven't lived my last 32 years of my life, have you? You haven't lived that. So you're not me and I'm not you. You don't have the resilience that I've got in any situation. And whilst you were out partying, I was studying. Whilst you were spending money to do certain things, I was spending it on courses. So there's a difference between me and you straight away, right? So use my words as power to motivate you and to help you become more disciplined in your life. So people say, well, how can I start? Start by understanding what discipline means. Go to the thesaurus in the dictionary and read it. Well, discipline, we know what it means. Well, you don't because you're not disciplined. And I speak to people that are serial entrepreneurs, very successful, got millions in the bank, and they talk about motivation and stuff. And I pulled a few of them up and they were like, oh, that's a bit harsh. I said, how are you talking about discipline? One of the guys was so overweight, like so overweight. I said, you are not disciplined. Because a disciplined
person... I bet he reacted badly to that.
Well, we were given as good as we got to each other. And we had a good conversation after we cuddled and shook hands. And I'm not going to name who the guy was. And... a very successful guy, more successful in his own rights when it comes to pound sterling than me. But when it comes to discipline, I broke it down and explained it to him. And he said, you're so right. What's he done now? He's bought an ice bath. He's got a personal trainer at the house. He messaged me. He's like, I love you. He's like, you gave me that kick that I needed that none of my staff or anyone would ever give me. All I've heard my whole life is,
Yeah.
You're all right the way you are. You're successful. I'd love to have your car. He went, I got so caught in the illusion of thinking that I was great. He went, I look like I've eaten myself. And yeah. I'm talking very big, right?
But he's thinking about how he looks for other people,
yeah.
isn't he?
Yeah.
He's not thinking about himself, inside himself and his own well-being, which is obviously a very important word these days.
Yeah.
So it's just... How do you get to start, though? Because I one thing I do is I listen to just one thing, right, with yep. Michael Mosley on Radio 4. And he's come up with 40 or so things that you can do every day, right? And it becomes... Because you've mentioned somewhere about rituals.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't quite use that word for me, but I just use things that are in my life style. Yep. And I don't even have to think about them anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things is eat beetroot. Well, I love beetroot, so why not eat it?
Well, that's a part of your ritual then.
Yes, I suppose it is, yeah. Drink coffee, drink water, you know, sing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Blah, blah. And these things are so, so easy, and you don't have to do them for very long. You know, eat chocolate. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, thanks. And there's medical as well as mental well-being benefits to all of that. But isn't it then just finding that right mix of those things for you? Because I imagine a lot of people will think about them as New Year's resolutions.
New Year's resolutions
last 3 weeks.
If it helps you sort of transcend something in your mindset to get the click moment to say, right, I've had the worst month of booze, I'm done. That's what I did. And I did dry Jan. Quickly said, I'm doing Q1. Then I said, well, I might have to do an extra month to do month 4 because I go Barbados, then I'll have a drink there. Didn't drink in Barbados, come home, did another month 5. Now I can categorically say I will never drink again. And there's for many reasons behind that.
But that worked for you, didn't it? There are others who have New Year's resolutions, you know, like, yep, I'm going to give up dry January. Well, by the 15th, 17th, they've fallen by the wayside.
Yeah.
So isn't it finding the right things for you? And do you need resilience and strength to be able to do it?
You do. Resilience and strength will always help anything in life, but determination and willpower and discipline, which normally come as a three, are something that you need to adopt, because you can't motivate somebody that has no will or purpose to go anywhere. Otherwise, you're just basically motivating an idiot. You don't want a motivated idiot running around, right? You need to educate that person so they're no longer an idiot. And then you motivate someone that has now got purpose, that can go somewhere. So I always try and say to people, just start with the most simplest things. Get up and make your bed. I make it every day, and people always say to me, you make your bed all the time. I do it all the time. When the film crew are there, when I have friends around, make the bed.
Yeah.
Everybody can do that, right? And, you know, disabilities aside, everybody can make their bed, theoretically speaking. Go drink a pint of water.
Yeah.
I have people go, oh, but I don't really like water. What are you, a kid? What are you, a baby?
For Christ's sake, if you don't like water, what?
Hold your bloody nose and guzzle it down like it's water. You know, like, go drink a pint of water. Yeah. Make your bed, drink a pint of water. Go get in a cold shower. Do something to trigger your reward system instantly.
But you don't have to do much, do you?
No.
Those are really... They're important, but
simplistic,
they're small,
mundane,
simple,
trivial things, right?
Yeah.
And
which arguably you should all be doing anyway.
Yeah, and people go, oh, I don't like the cold. Well, who does? Just get in there and get it
done.
That's
the point, isn't
you're it? You're an adult, right?
Yeah.
Get in there and get, you're not going to die. Get in there and get it done. Or what's going to happen is, how are you going to get endorphins and dopamine for the rest of your day? You're probably going to go, wake up, and instantly with one eye open, go on social media, scrolling, right? Because it gives you an endorphin hit, right? A bit of dopamine.
But it doesn't.
Very
does it?
Cheap.
Yeah.
Then what are you going to do after that? Because that's going to wear off very quickly, right?
Then
you're then going to look for chocolate, junk food, social media again. You're going to go to platform, right? So the difference is, what I tell people is, can you be in control of yourself and limit the time you spend on social media? Can you cut out chocolate just for 21 days for me? Change chocolate for fruit. So you're still getting sugar, blob of honey, whatever. Change it up.
Banana.
Make your bed. Drink a pint of water. Let's just start there. What? Well, that's it. That's all I want you to do for the next 3 weeks. Just those little things.
Yeah.
Well, what about maybe going for a run? If you can go for a walk or a run, bonus, but don't push the boat, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'm trying to be very sort of sympathetic towards, you know, someone that's at the very low end of the scale, right? Because I know even trying to get out of bed can be a difficult task when you're feeling a certain kind of way. So, you know, if they can do those small little things, small things lead to big things. And the problem is with society nowadays, I hear too much, well, that doesn't matter. It's only a small thing. But the small things will accumulate to the big things. And yeah. if one thing doesn't matter, nothing bloody matters.
Yeah.
Everything should matter. And that should be the way you make your dinner should matter. The way you make your bed. The way you speak to people. The way you speak to yourself. Everything you do matters. One thing can't matter. And then I hear people say, well, why don't you do things in moderation? Because if you're not happy with the person that you are, how can you do things in moderation? So I'm going to be a moderate, unhappy person. So moderation doesn't even work. Moderation works for those that are already at their pinnacle or already, you know, at their optimum or within that remit, right? So you can't tell me to do something in moderation when I'm already at a very low point or I'm not happy with who I am.
Is it hard to convince people not to beat themselves up, though? So, you know, for example, the make your bed, drink the water, eat chocolate or whatever.
Mm.
You can keep going on like that. And then if they miss a day or something, they beat themselves up because they think, I'm weak, I'm pathetic.
The problem is people need to realise that it's okay to miss a day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. You know, I'm not going to sit and act like the Andrew Tates of the world and absolutely beat people to a pulp because he's some kind of elite, right? I'm not going to do that because I understand that people sometimes do need their hand held.
We're human.
They need their hand held, right? Yeah. And, you know, but... If you're on a dry sober journey, let's use that as an example because it's an easy analogy as such, and you last 4 months, 5 months, 5 weeks, whatever that might be, right? And then you have a drink. That doesn't mean life's over. That doesn't mean you've let yourself down. To a degree, you've stumbled. But the next day is a new, fresh day. Yeah. You pick up where you left off and you start again. Telling anybody it's forever is going to scare the hell out of them. People don't even want to sign a bloody EE contract for 2 years nowadays. A contract? Oh, people don't want to do that. So don't tell them it's forever. Tell them it's for as long as they need it to be. Let them dictate and design their own pathway. And that's what's wrong. People look at social media. They see these materialistic things, this fabulous lifestyle. They see where people are who are in their 40s, 50s. But they don't realise that they're probably still in their 20s or early teens, the Gen Zs, and like you're so young. You've got so many years ahead of you. You will get there, but just start where you are now.
Yeah, you see, my son's 31 or something. And I've got two sons, one's 27, one's 31. The 31-year-old is thinking, he's unfortunately got a bit of the brain patterns that I've got.
Right? Yeah.
So, and he's thinking he's not progressing far enough. He's not as successful as he wants to be. He sees his friends getting jobs. He sees people at work getting better jobs that then end up with more money, you know, and he thinks, I'm not doing that. And he winds himself up about it and beats himself up about it. And I think this generation, his generation and the Gen Z's generation, have got a lot to think about and deal with because of those sorts of pressures.
Well, do you know what? It's unrealistic pressure because... what a lot of people do, look, you can look at it in two ways, as a positive and negative. I also do the same thing with pressure on myself, right? And I often have to take a self-reflection moment to say, well, wow, look where I was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, to where I am now. And that's also an element of gratitude, which then makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah.
But obviously, I'm well-trained to snap out of those kind of cycles. So I understand that perhaps he isn't. But the easiest thing to you to say to him at that point in time is, that is your motivation speaking. Because if you gave up on yourself, you wouldn't be thinking that you're running out of time. People that don't believe they're running out of time are the ones that get complacent with who they are at that time, and they will never evolve into anything different. So it's okay for him to feel that way. It's okay for him because that is the burning desire for him to reach success. And he'll have that forever. If it starts now, it's something you can't shift. I have it.
Yeah.
I should be bigger than what I am. I should be doing more. I should be doing this. I should be doing that. Now, I don't let it dictate my mood, but I would never blow that flame out. If someone said, open your chest and we'll blow it out, no, because that's my burning desire to reach my optimum.
That's interesting because, I mean, when I speak to him about it, I do that. I say, you know, that should spur you on. And then I don't say these words, but it's like, well, just snap out of it. Right?
Yeah.
And I'll say, look, if you want that, you need to do something about it.
Right? Yeah.
And that's not the right thing to say to that person. It's about giving them confidence that it's okay to be like that at this stage in your life because blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, so what I would recommend doing, right, is sitting down with him, getting out a pen and paper, telling him to write down his goals. Where does he want to be? Write them
down. I'm sorry for laughing because we have done that.
Yeah, so write them down. Yeah. Now take that and stick it on his wall, on his mirror. So he looks at it every day. And then what will happen is over time, because you write down enough goals, he'll look at that over time and some will have ticks next to them because he would have achieved them.
That is, yeah.
So then you know how far you're going. But also, like, that works really well with things like helping with dealing with childhood trauma. Put a picture of yourself on the mirror when you were 5 years old, 7 years old, so you can look how far you've come as an individual. And even next to that, the other end of the mirror, above your bed, which some people would say, oh, it's like having a poster in the 90s above your bed. Put someone that you idolize. And now, I'm not talking about comparison here. Don't compare yourself to people. I'm talking about idolizing someone that is a person that you would like to be of a similarity to. So put someone that
Pick some of the qualities of that.
Well, there
person,
you go, yeah. Right? So pick three people, five people. It doesn't have to be a person. I'm just speaking sort of out loud. But put five people there who you acquire to be like, right? One could be the body shape, the fitness. One could be the business ethics. One could be the brain ethics, you know. Pick three people, whatever. And every day, when you go to do something that you know truly isn't great, isn't right, and is not going to serve you, look at those people. So have them on your phone as well and say to yourself, would my idol do that? And that's what I do. I've got my own idols. And that's exactly what I do. And I went back up to 14 and a half stone. I've done it twice in my life. And it wasn't too long ago. It was last year, right? And I shaved my hair. I've had a skinhead. Just because I thought, you know what, I'm going to do something random. Why? Was it impulsiveness? Is it my ADHD? I don't know what it was. And I was going through a bit of a hard time. I was running the startup, Sharab, running the business, which is always challenging, running a new company, well as facing the trolls, the rest of the world, and the high expectations that people have of me and us as a family, right? As well as sort of still dealing with the backlash of being slaughtered by the media for certain things that's happened over the years. And, you know, things take their toll. As again, I am human, you know, I'm not this almighty warrior, yeah, from the 1800s. So, you know, I am human and I feel things, but I just learn how to digest them and work myself around them or through.
Has your psychology degree helped in that?
Massively, massively, like 100%, because I now understand when I feel certain things, and it helped me create self-belief. Because you get two things: you get life coaching, you get mentors, and people don't understand the difference between them. A mentor is someone that will tell you what to do, but as I mentioned earlier, they're not there at 5 a.m. in the morning. You're not going to be getting out of bed, right? A life coach will help you understand and bring out the person that you want to be on your own accord, because someone doing something on a belief level is different from when someone does it when they're told to, and that's how it goes into the workplace.
Well, being told to do something is short-lived, isn't it? Because you think, well, I can't
it's,
be bothered.
It's not your action, is it?
But actually, if somebody coaches out of you, and I know you're a counsellor as well, but if they coach out of you to make up your own mind about something, it's so much more powerful.
Well, when you make up your own mind to do an action, that also falls in the same sort of remit as purpose, as a goal, as a self-determined instruction, which means you're more likely to achieve it because you believe you can do it.
You mentioned a little earlier about your own mental health journey. Talk to me a bit about that then.
Yes. So, like, for me, I didn't realise I had any mental health issues. I only knew what I knew, and I accepted what I knew, like many of us do. And it took me to the point of self-reflection to realise, hey, those actions are not normal. And it showed up in my adulthood, in relationships, the way I dealt with situations, the way I looked at the world. And sometimes I would say and think, have I got a split personality? Have I got anxiety still? Why am I this way inclined?
God, this resonates bloody
hard. Why am I this way inclined? And it's because I only knew what I knew. And I was arrogant to change. Because I was, well, I'm all right. And then next week, well, maybe I'm not. Why have I acted that way? And it would be the way that I reacted to situations. And that's why I took on quantum thinking, as I mentioned. Because I want to understand why when she or he says X, why do I act like Y?
So how do you then deal with the social media trash that's going on?
As in towards me, that stuff? Or?
Yeah. Because it's, you know, I mean, when I got fired from Superdry, which is a while back, I got a lot of press coverage. Right?
Yeah.
And there was a cartoon of me in one of the nationals of, you know, an obvious accountant stood in a Superdry shop window with for sale. around his neck. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it did not help me at all. But I didn't know how to deal with that. So how, you know, and you must be getting that quite a lot. That was only one, you know, it's like a space over about a week, but you must get that all the time. Are people...
We've had it on and off. Like,
so how do you deal with it?
When I first met Fern, somebody sold a story of a picture of me taking drugs. And I was never really someone that actually took drugs much. It was so random that I let someone even film me because I was probably overexcited that I was trying something, being an absolute juvenile delinquent, right? And that was a big downfall for me because I just come into the public eye and I was kicked in the nuts and blindfolded and dragged around by the back of a car, right? And I was like, oh, what an entry that is, okay? So we sort of got through that and I did a lot of work with my therapist as well to understand, like, what is this? Like, I can shrug off anything and push away and wipe off anything, really, because, again, because of my resilience. And
you're lucky in that respect.
I am, and also I've earned it through pain, right? So then it happened again. Someone sold another story of a different time, right? This is all stuff from so long ago. And I couldn't at that time digest and understand or comprehend why this individual needed a couple of £1,000 from the press to try and sabotage and bring down my up and comings of becoming the person that I wanted to be. And because I was speaking out online and talking and doing things in the right way, people were sat there sort of, you know, nihilistic and jealous and resentful and really wanted to see me down in the dumps, right? And
they should be celebrating it, shouldn't they?
Exactly, right? And it did actually come from friends. And that's why I put posts out now. People go, you can't say that. If we were friends before, we haven't seen each other for a certain amount of time, I believe that we're now associates. We had a friendship, but we're now associates. I'm not the person I was 5 years ago. Maybe you are, maybe you are not. I don't know, because we don't speak often enough to know. So we're associates, right? I don't dislike you, but I don't absolutely love you. We are associates, and I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with not being invited to things. And I'm okay with not being in group chats. And I'm okay with things because I'm happy with who I am and my journey and where I'm going.
It's taken a long time to get there.
It's taken me a long time. A lot of people have fear of missing out, the you know, inverted commas phrase, FOMO, right? And they want to be on social media. They want to be at the party, want to be at the event. And they often do things they don't want to do just because they fear of missing out, right? And they believe they should be in that place when realistically they should be somewhere completely different. And, you know, then having that second kick in the balls, it hurt. And I more felt guilty towards Fern because I come into her world of a place that she built and I felt I was bringing her down. That was the difficult thing because...
That's interesting.
Because she was someone... Fern's only been someone I've really cared about in my whole life and I've had to really learn how to unpack my own emotional intelligence because of let's say, neglect as a title word with lots of things underneath that. I never really had the emotional stability to be compassionate and empathetic towards people because I was that guy that was, oh, man up, what's up with you? Yeah. Oh, grow up. Yeah. Like, what's up? Get to work. What do you mean? Yeah. I was that guy and had that 90s attitude and the 80s and the 70s and the 60s, right? And, you know, I really cared about her and it was the first time I've ever actually been in love and loved someone more than anything I've ever had in life, obviously until my daughter was born and my son and I've got a 7-year-old son, but I don't go much in about him, although he shares a lot of time at our home. For press reasons, I don't talk about him because they seem to run a story just because he's not seen much, so let's run it. So I felt an element of guilt towards her there. For sure. And she reassured me and stuck by me at that early stage, you know, when it could have affected her career.
I was going to say, because she has her own career, doesn't she? She has her own profile.
She's massively successful in her own right. She's an entrepreneur. She's got success in all different elements, right?
So does she get the trolling?
Yeah, 100%. Every person in the public eye gets trolled. But usually it depends who you are as a person and how you deliver things in life, the proportion and percentage of trolling you will get. Because if you're an agreeable person, your trolling is going to be a very low percentage. If you're somebody that talks out, speaks out and is not an agreeable person because you have your own beliefs, then you're automatically going to get people that want to counter argue that, you know, and don't believe in your beliefs or don't agree with your opinion.
Does it ever get you down and make you change your opinion?
Never. I never, and I've had to encourage Fern so much over the last couple of years to not stop deleting posts. Say what you want to say. Be who you want to be. Do not allow the echoing voice of trolls, let's call them, right? Because their voice and opinions don't matter. And for me, I could stand on a stage and deliver a talk whilst people were booing. I thrive from it now. And how do you turn pain to power? How do you turn pain to power? You've got to tap into your resilience, and you've also got to tap into the facts that those people that are putting you down in that moment, whether it's writing a comment, sending something, whatever it is, they must be so unhappy with themselves, because I don't do it, and I'm fulfilled and have happiness within my life. I don't do it. So you must be the complete opposite to me, because you do it. So you must be a very unhappy person to share so much negativity. And I feel bad for those that surround themselves with those people. I would say it's like getting a brand new t-shirt and there's a piece of cotton hanging off it and you're going out for dinner. Get the scissors and cut it off and get rid of them out of your life. Yeah. They are not your friends. They're not people you want to be around.
Yeah.
Anyone who's negative and speaks badly about other people, believe me, they speak about you the same way.
Yeah, that piece of advice has come out on this show a number of times about get rid of the negativity.
Get rid of it. I say all the time, friends, family, get rid of them. What? Get rid of the family? Get rid of them. Blood doesn't make you family.
Do you know what? When I was a few years ago, I announced to my mother, who's sadly no longer with us, that I was moving away from the family because all the negativity and bad shit that I was getting from them.
Yeah.
I said, I don't need this. I can't live my life like this worrying about that. So I did, and I haven't seen them for
years.
And I feel there's a little bit of guilt, there's a tinge of guilt there. But actually, I know it was the right thing for me to do because it was just causing me grief and upsetting the relationship with my wife and my family, and meant I didn't enjoy stuff. So
you made a choice on what was important.
Yeah.
And look at the outcome now.
Yeah.
And that's, people need to make that decision. Some people say, but I can't just cut them off. I don't know how. Just block them on social media and delete their number.
Well, I went out for dinner with my mum and told her. Because social media wasn't around in those days, of course.
Yeah.
I'm not that she'd be on it, of course. But, I like to do these things in person, which is obviously harder. But, so be it. And I feel a hell of a lot freer because of it.
I think people feel this virtual obligation to be loyal to...
I don't think it's virtual. I think it's a real obligation.
If it's direct mother and son and daughter relationship, and you live close together and not distant, if you live distant, just block their number.
Yeah.
Like, you don't, sometimes things don't need an explanation in life. People always believe they have to explain the reason why. I don't give that. And some will say, well, that's so cutthroat. I'm like, to who? To the Urban Dictionary that explained what cutthroat means? No, it's not. It's called me respecting my boundaries. It's called me sticking within my discipline remit that I set. And I'm not obligated to explain to anybody why I no longer want to allow them to serve negativity in my life.
I spoke to my godson, actually, who's 31. And he gave me that same advice.
Good.
At which point, I mean, this was after I'd said goodbye to my parents, or my family, rather. And I just thought, oh, Christ, why haven't I not done this before?
Yeah, that's the big question people need to be asking themselves. Like, if you want change, we spoke earlier about doing some of the most trivial things, right? The easy tasks. But also, look at the bigger picture. Who do you surround yourself with? And that analogy that's always chucked around, you're one of the five you spend your time with. It's not just chucked around for a sort of like a party up. It's a real factual sentence. And you walk into a room because energy is everything. Frequency and energy is everything. Now, if there was 10 of us in this room and we were all having a big argument and the door opened and two people walked in and we all went quiet, those two people know something is not right in that room. Energy is everything. Mm. And when you give your gratification to yourself, to the universe, to what you've got and what you've got coming, you automatically push yourself to the hierarchical position in the frequency chain that is so powerful, it changes everything. And I had it with my brother when we were a bit younger. And when he didn't believe he had anything to be grateful for. Well, what to be grateful for? So I put my hand around his nose and mouth and held it tight. He started trying to elbow me. He was like, let go. What are you fucking doing? He started swearing. I said,
be grateful that you're breathing.
All you wanted was your breath.
Yeah.
That's all you wanted. So be grateful for what you actually truly have, because there's people in the world that don't have that. And there's people laying there taking their last breath right now. Yeah. And you're there moaning about what you don't have.
Yeah.
And there's a difference, right? And
that's a really, okay, that's a real difficult place to get to, though, isn't it?
It is indeed. And, you know, and but again, everyone's had their own traumas. So, you know, sometimes it does take someone to give you that little kick of realization to help.
So what? Well, we started, I think, about 20 minutes ago about talking about your mental health journey. We still haven't got there yet. So, tell me about your traumas then.
Yeah. So, it was more the fact, like, my parents having friends around, you know, consuming drugs, drinking, smoking cigarettes. My mum would smoke about 50 cigarettes a day in the car, in the house. I mean, it was a big thing back then, wasn't it? I mean, footballers were promoting it as normal at halftime. So don't sort of have any blame towards that. But it was back to what I mentioned, that spending money on certain types of things versus providing for me as a child, right? So I wouldn't have had to sort of neglect my education. And then it was the poor choices that she made as a mother to allow men into our life to hit us and take advantage of us as children. And, you know, my brother was often pinned against the wall until he sort of urinated and certain things. And she should have been the person to say no, but she allowed it to happen. And she put me in a situation at such a young age that I had to physically and violently protect my family, which could have seen me put behind bars for a long, long time. And I was lucky that no charges were pushed forward and the situation didn't end as bad as it could have done. But that then led me to be homeless, which meant I didn't get to see my other siblings. Some of them went into care. So we had a very disjointed family at a cost of our own sanity. And why should we have inherited such a turbulent time, pain? Why should we have got that and when it wasn't our fault and you didn't even give us the opportunity or the option?
Is that how you're thinking then? So this isn't my fault, because quite often when you do have a mental health issue, you blame yourself for it.
Well, no, because I didn't believe I had a mental health issue at them points. Okay. I just was angry towards her and the guys that she brought in, and no 15-year-old, 16-year-old, obviously I've skipped a few years there, should have to fight with fully grown men with knives and things to try and protect their family. And no one should have to be woken up to fights downstairs and seeing, you know, my mum get lighters put out in her eyes, and you know, like, those things shouldn't be also made as a normality where it's brushed under the carpet the next day, like as if everything's normal. And what happens is years and years of being emotionally and mentally beaten with the drum of all of that crap, you know, crap being the word of violence and everything else that's involved in that, you then think it's okay. So when I would have a punch up outside, I go, he's done my nose, I've done his lip, it's only a little scrap. That's not normal. How's that a normal life? And it's taken me to get to my 30s to realise that things that I would accept as normality most certainly was not normal.
No.
And obviously, you know, I've never hit a woman and I'll never accept that as normal, even though I watched it a lot. So, you know, but it was the small things that I still say is small. There you go. When they actually could be huge. You know, I've seen people go through, their parents had a divorce and it's broke them mentally. And again, never comparing eggs, and you compare it to some of the things that I've seen and been through, I could never comprehend how they were so upset over a divorce. I'm like, well, it's just a divorce. Like, people break up. I've had seven stepdads. So then there was one guy that I sort of got attached to because I didn't know my father. And he used to drink a lot. My mum then had an affair behind his back. So he then one day gave me his football sticker book and said, I'm giving this to you. And I was like, why? Because you'd never give that to me. He's like, because I'm not going to be around anymore. So I had his last name in junior school. And I was like, so this guy is not my dad. So then my mum changed my name to the original guy's name, it should have been my original name, to the guy that I never met. So stepdad, who I thought was that I called dad, left and took my younger sibling with him, who was his biological father and kid. In moves the new guy within the same sort of process. They might as well have helped each other with their bags on the way in and out. Then I've got my name changed to not the old guy or the new guy, but someone I don't even bloody know. Then we're booked in to meet the dad. Wow. And then she didn't even bring me to meet my biological father. We had an arranged place on a busy main road. And I remember very, you know, quite vividly that I walked up to the guy and was staring at him. He was staring at me. And the reason why I know now he's probably awkwardly staring at me is because I was right looking at him. And I was like, I think you're my dad. And he's like, mate, I'm so sorry. I don't think I am. I probably gave him the shock of his bloody life. And then within minutes of a work van pulls up and my dad, beep, beep, Laurie, brings me in the van. And then what happened then was he then bought my love because he would give me money and something I never had. And then that quickly only lasted for a certain amount of time, a year and a half. And he would see me every 10 days, 2 weeks, take me out for a nice roast in a pub I never experienced, bought me new trainers. So I felt, well, hey, I'm on top of the world right now. And I've met my dad and I never had any resentment towards him. But then things changed very quickly. And, you know, my anger issues, I was a more emotionally aware. So I then become more resentful and angry towards him and my mum. So I could never listen to what she would tell me to do. And then the new stepdad would give us a big smack if we were naughty. And my mum would hit my sister. So I would jump on my mum and try and stop her. And she would literally give us uppercuts and right hooks and give you a beating, right? So the list can go on forever. So when you ask, what are your traumas? That's minutes worth. It can keep going. Now, as I said at the start, I'm not going to say it was completely terrible. But we had social services. I would often get brought home by the police. I was disobedient. I would never obey any commands from...
But it's not stability, is it?
There's zero stability there. The only thing that was stable was probably the same dinner at the same time. Like, that's
we're,
it.
We're running out of time, which is a shame because I'm thoroughly enjoying this. what do you do now? You've got Shura and Shuru.
So Shuru is Shura's trusted guru. It's an AI piece of technology that's a part of Shura. So we're literally about to launch probably Monday, but I'll give it to you guys now. It's already there available. It's fully multilingual, speaks every language. It's powered by the most powerful AI tools and over a million data sheets that we have built by doctors on our board and specialists that work with us. So it's a very powerful, intelligent tool. And the new feature to it, you can hold a button down and talk to it and it will talk back. Which it gives you that non-opinionated, non-judgmental advice, inverted commas, from a therapeutic companion, because legally we can't say that's a therapist, right?
No.
And we've had so much positive feedback and PR around it. It's been a real sort of changer, especially for the Gen Z nation that don't want to speak to therapists. And as you'll know, when you're having a bit of a mental health breakdown or relapse, trying to Google and find therapy and turn up somewhere, that's a mission in itself. This is on the device. You press the button.
I love the 24/7.
24/7, 365. And we've got so many other features in there that we won't have time to go into, but so much. And the reason why we built this app, me and Fern, when we first met, we laugh about it. We bonded through trauma. We both had an equal amount of traumas, right? Completely different as well. She was spending around £300 a month. I was spending about £80 a month, which we know is definitely...
On therapy.
On all types of tools, different types of things. Not therapy. Okay. No, Jesus, therapy sessions were on top. I was having 3 sessions a week for about 3 years. But I was financially in this situation I can. I know majority of the population can't.
Yeah.
So that was another reason why we work so hard on prevention rather than wait till crisis. So we went through them. We had a conversation just generally, naturally. And I was like, what are you even using? What's that meditation you doing? And just... She was showing me hers. I was like, £300 a month? What the hell? And I was spending £80 a month. That's £380 a couple. I said, we need something that is better than what's here, has what these guys are missing for under a tenner. She's like, how? That's when we started doing the deep research and getting it done. And we built what we've got now in the last 2 years.
I'm in admiration.
We've rolled out to some of the UK's biggest companies right now in a year.
Because it's both personal and... business, isn't
personal
it?
And professional. Yeah, we focus a lot on the workforce. We launched B2B early this year, and already, as I said, we've got some of the UK's biggest companies using us because everybody's now understanding that prevention is more powerful than just crisis.
The business case, we were talking earlier,
exactly,
is
that
just is compelling.
Exactly.
So why wouldn't an organisation do something?
Why would
like
you
that?
Not want to help prevent? Because somebody who has a more fulfilled mindset and lifestyle is going to be more proactive in the workplace
more
versus someone who
creative.
Doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the problem with
less absenteeism, less recruitment.
Exactly.
Less
we save
training.
People on sick pay. We save them on recruitment costs.
NHS savings.
Everything. And we're in talks with the NHS at the moment. Yeah. We want to roll out to those guys to help take the pressure off of them.
Yeah.
So people can almost self-diagnose themselves when it gets to that point, they can just look at a report, the doctor, because right now you wait months for an appointment, you've got 30 minutes to spill your heart out, and the poor doctor's then got to assess you and give you some sort, and that's why it's easy just to say SSRIs.
Yeah. And Laurie, then, we're going to have to
cut it.
And
you go on medication.
I'm so sorry, we're going to have to cut it there.
All good.
It's been really, really interesting, and thanks for being so open.
More than welcome.
And I've learned a lot, actually. I've learned some stuff about myself, would you believe? So thank you for that. And I've got pages of notes here, most of which we haven't actually spoken about. But
maybe next time.
You'll have to
maybe
come
save
back.
Them for next time. Yeah. Pin them on the wall.
Yeah. Actually, good thought. All right. Laurie.
Thank
Laurie
you so
Haynes,
much.
Thank you very much.